Hello and welcome to Spectrum Iran, Saad Television's weekly program focusing on important issues concerning the Islamic Republic of Iran. Tonight we'll be focusing on the Sacred Defense Week. Stay with us. Welcome back. Iran marked the beginning of its Sacred Defense Week on a Sunday, the annual commemoration of the 1980-1988 imposed Iraqi war on the Islamic Republic of Iran. Special ceremonies are being held across the nation to pay homage to the sacrifices and braveries of the Iranian youth who defended their country. Well, in view of the importance of the occasion, we've decided to dedicate this particular edition of Spectrum Iran to a flashback on the sacrifices and memories of 8 years of imposed war. And to help us with our show tonight, we have the pleasure of being joined in the studio by Brigadier General Dr. Mohammad Hassan Nami, Deputy Chief of the Preservation of Sacred Defense Values and Works Foundation. Dr. Nami, thank you for taking part in our program, sir.
Thank you very much indeed. Please let me greet your viewers and all the audience, all Iranians overseas and in the domestic borders, especially the ones in Europe. I would like to greet and express my warmest welcome to all people in the European countries as well. Luckily, I'm very happy to be at your service, and you and your colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you. But first, let's take a listen to our introduction. Stay with us. A military parade has been held at the mausoleum of Imam Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, in the south of Tehran to commemorate the beginning of Iran's Sacred Defense Week. In Iran, the 1980-1988 Iran-Iraq War is known as the Sacred Defense, and the Sacred Defense Week is held on the anniversary of the beginning of the war. Sacred Defense Week begins on Shahrivar 31st in the Iranian calendar, September 22nd this year, which is the day Iraq invaded Iran and began the imposed war on the country in 1980. Various units of the Islamic Republican Guards Corps, Iran's armed forces, and the Islamic Republic of Iran police participated in the military parade, which was covered by hundreds of Iranian and foreign reporters. Military attachés of dozens of countries based in Tehran attended the event, during which the latest achievements of Iran's defense industry were displayed. Welcome back. Brigadier General Nami, without further ado, sir, please tell us about the Iraqi imposed war and why did a young revolution, the Islamic revolution in Iran, had to endure such a bloody occupation and invasion by the Iraqi dictator Saddam?
تشکر میکنم.
Well, thank you. I need to mention that, you know, if it's okay, we start how the war started, actually. While 19 months had passed after the young Islamic revolution in Iran, the war, a full-scale war, was imposed upon us. And in different revolutions up to some years, because of the vast changes of the fundamentals of the society, and these developments are very, very vast and widespread, and we were not at all prepared to face such a war. You know, we have a very long borderline with Iran, with Iraq, about 1,600 and something, and just it's about 1,608 kilometers with various terrains, and you know, taken from very high mountains to, you know, flat areas and river areas, you know, which is separating between Iran and Iraq, and no, some parts of the borders we have, you know, we have sea borders and land borders as well, and this variety is very extreme. The country that, you know, was ruled by Saddam, Iraq, was fully armed, actually. All the countries, all the, you know, the superpowers had armed the Saddam regime, you know. People, those countries which were very facilitated with arms and things, you know, supported him with arms. You know, for example, the United States helped in intelligence services, sometimes more important than the armed and weaponry and stuff like that. I just want to set an example. At that time, we didn't have, actually, we didn't have satellite, you know, images with high resolution in the Middle East. Actually, the Middle East did not have, you know, but the Americans, you know, provided Saddam with all the satellite images, and they told them what routes we were taking, and they provided full view of our forces to Saddam. And it was the first time, actually, a country that with these, you know, weaponry and with this great support, you know, from the global arrogance and some neighboring countries, started to fight against us, start an imposed war against us, you know, something like, you know, in within 6 to 7 months, you know, 600 million tons, you know, of bullets and things were used. You know, some tanks, actually, like, you know, the ones made by Soviet Union, were not made at that time. And the war started like that, you know, on the 11th, actually at 11:15:45 of the 31st of Shahr Rivan, actually. And that was in that, on that day, you know, Saddam Hussein was posited in a T-64 tank, and sent a bullet, a hard bullet, you know, as a symbol of invasion towards Iran. You know, this was the garrison, Kut garrison, which was actually about 60 kilometers away from the southwestern borders, and that garrison was actually 60 kilometers inside the border, and in the position, actually, Saddam started shooting, you know, in Kut garrison. There were a number of different headquarters and ministers, foreign ministers and defense ministers of some of the neighboring countries were there on the scene. And on the other side, you know, about, you know, 30 to 35 meters, there was a car, a jeep, actually a military car, which had different, you know, wireless systems and different antennas and receivers and senders. And on this car, Adnan Khairullah, which was then turned into the defense minister of Iraq, was in contact with the headquarters of Iraq. And simultaneously with the shooting of the first bullet towards Iran, and then upon that, it was a new tank, actually, you know, and it had not yet entered the operation. It was a T-64 tank, and which was a very advanced tank at that time. And right after that, you know, we had T-72 taken from Soviet Union. At that time, it was a very modern tank, actually. And Adnan Khairullah, you know, received a message, you know, actually, that, you know, the content was talking about the, you know, Iraqi Air Force had started an air raid towards Iran, you know, many fighters, bombers, and bomber fighters, you know, a great number of them. If you remember, on that day, many of our garrisons and headquarters were hit by the airstrike, and some of the, you know, some of the Air Force, you know, headquarters were even bombarded on the bands, you know, so we would lose the ability to depart airplanes. And Adnan Khairullah just, when received this, you know, piece of news, and just saluted to Saddam and said that our youth started their journey towards Iran. And Saddam talked to the audience and said, up to 1 hour later, Iran's back will be broken. And 3 days later, in Ahwaz, and next week we will be in Tehran, we will have lunch in Tehran. Even Rafiq Samrai in his book writes that, you know, Brigadier Rafiq Samrai, who was later the head of intelligence services of Iraq, in his book writes that, you know, this is an interesting point, that, you know, the message is the content and the quotation. Oh, the speech of Saddam was prepared to be given in Ahwaz. So it means that, you know, they were fully prepared, and they had, and through their own materialistic criteria, they had predicted that they will win the war very, very quickly. You know, in some cities, you know, they made victories, and they occupied some of the borderline cities, you know, Abadan and things like that. They changed the names of, you know, Khuzestan province into Arabistan province, and Khorramshahr to Muhammara, and even they integrated the, you know, telegraph, telephone, and electricity posts to the Iraqi ones. Well, these were the materialistic, you know, criteria that they were fighting there. On the other side, in Iran, we were fighting with actually divine criteria, getting support from our God in the heavenly forces, and this under the supervision of Faqih Imam Khomeini, and actually a person whom the rest of the young people, the country, believed in, and their message was absolutely observed by the people. The enemy started the war, and despite the lack of preparation we had, you know, at that time I was head of a military, you know, group, and in the first steps we tried to prevent the progress of enemy, and one of the routes they had, you know, was the between Ali Sharqi and Ali Gharbi, was that, you know, and they were planning to pass through this, and they get to Musian and in Khosh, and they pass, and then they occupy the Dasht Abbas, and immediately after that, you know, pass Karkhe River and not move towards and Dimashq and Desful, just go towards, you know, Tangefani, as they call it. It's a part of because it's a very strategic area, because it, you know, the borderline, you know, railway passes through that, and a very main and strategic way to from Tehran to Khurramshahr and Abadan passes through that. If this strait was closed, definitely Khuzestan would be lost. You know, a part of their strong armies, you know, passed through Karkhe, but we could stop them at the back of Karkhe River. The interesting points, you know, we can see here is that our people, because it was, we were very close to Desful, and the time I was in the operations, you know, all the time we, you know, we went to Desful to take showers and things like that. And we saw that people, you know, the families, the households were living there in normal life, you know, although the difficult, there were difficult situations and things like that. We were shocked, actually, what kind of people are they? Why are they so relaxed? And Khuzestan province people were the first ones to start the defense against the enemy. And that's an important part, actually, up to the Islamic Revolution. Whoever or whatever group, you know, attacked Iran, they separated a piece before Islamic Revolution, and 3,500,000 square kilometers were separated from Iran's land. It was the first time in history of Iran that, you know, a country, an enemy with this power, supported by the superpowers and some of the neighbors, they could not take even a single centimeter of our land. And we sent them back with a great fiasco, actually, with a great number of prisoners of wars. We sent them out of our country. You know, the third stage of Beitul Muqaddas operation, it was one of the most unique, actually, operations, land operations, you know, held on the land. There were three stages for that, you know, and I need to mention that, you know, through the innovations, even in the land, you know, the battles through modern tactics, which were peerless in the world, and it was not taught in no war countries in the world. You know, for example, I exactly remember when we were trying to operate for Khurramshahr, we had three stages. The first one, we had to pass across Karun, and right after that, gets ready for a re-attack, actually, and waiting for the other group to join us to in the Khurramshahr Ahvaz. And more than 23 kilometers we progressed with war, and this is even difficult to walk. And you know, we walked from Khurramshahr to the borderline, and we supported safety for that. And in the third stage, we entered Khurramshahr, and one of the new tactics we actually employed, despite the new strategies taught in the world, was the operation, you know, we had, you know, passing through the river is a great operation, because it's very difficult. We passed the river, and our military groups were ready to attack, and then we started again to reach the different, you know, army parts and departments of Iraqi army. In the third stage, actually, for the world, and for the world it was shocking, and for Saddam it was inevitable to believe. You know, it could not believe that, because before, actually it was so difficult to pass through Khurramshahr, because there were a lot of obstacles and hurdles installed around Khurramshahr, you know, different fortifications and stuff like that, and different cars, you know, you couldn't believe, you know, people could pass through these obstacles and hurdles. And the number of people, you know, armed people in Khurramshahr was 3.1, you know, times as many as our armed forces. You know, we entered from Chalamche. It was actually unbelievable for the commanders that we did it. You know, through 19,600 we had 19,600 prisoners of war in that operation. You know, and then we had, they had 28,000 and something, you know, fatalities. We can see that, you know, through the materialistic, you know, criteria, we cannot measure these. And these were done and accomplished through the divine and strong heavenly stuff. And these, from these sacred defense, we learned a lot.
I'll pick you up on that later on, Dr. Naomi. We're going to take a short break. We'll continue our discussion with Brigadier General Naomi after this break. Stay with us. Welcome back to Spectrum Iran. Brigadier General Naomi, you shed light on the sacred defense, as it were, and the fact that Iran made good use of new tactics and the fact that it was able to fight this well-armed enemy. But briefly tell us, why did Saddam attack Iran?
Yes. Well,
and that, you know, as you know, the Ba'ath regime, you know, to Iran and the you know, escalation of Iran's power after revolution, we, you know, did not find, you can't find any logical reason. But some of the reasons for their attack include, one, to inspire, you know, because Saddam was inspired and motivated by the, you know, superpowers, especially the United States. And another one was the, you know, that the United States' interest was, were at stake by Islamic Revolution. And the third one was the anger, you know, they had because of, you know, the occupation of the United States embassy in Iran and the fiasco and the defeat of Tabas operation. Of course, there are different reasons and different reasons for the war, but we can see that, you know, we need to mention a historic point, actually. If about a month and a half after Islamic Revolution, the United States sent a message to Saddam that we want to meet you and mention something very important. It was very clear that, you know, there was a plan, a war plan, you know, Saddam had a plan, a detailed plan, and the Western powers had a detailed plan to overthrow Islamic Revolution. A number of times, you know, Saddam denied to accept this, but on the 28th of Ordibehesht in 1358, you know, Saddam accepted, and they sends the presidential guard sends to the one of the Egyptian cities, Osman cities, and then another part on the other side, the Pentagon, you know, intelligence service, you know, meets each other, and they provide the Iraqi official with intelligences and information necessary for that. You know, if you want to, you know, want to have, you know, these different, if you say Iran is equipped with these different military power like F-14, F-5, different for, you know, missiles and things like that. Don't worry about this stuff because they were they could be operated when we were giving them provided service. And as I was saying previously that, you know, when they attacked Iran, they did not expect any Iranian Air Force to depart from Iran's, you know, airport, right, and we should remember that, you know, after 18 hours, 140 airplanes, Iran's airplanes attacked Iraq, and in this part, you know, Rafiq Samurai mentions that when all these Iranian airplanes attacked Iran, I looked at Saddam's picture, I saw the regret, the great feeling of regret in Saddam's face. And if he had a way, you know, he would go back, and he had no opportunity. And that's, you know, they did not expect Iran's an Iranian innovation, and not even Saddam, not intelligences. None of them thought that, you know, the Iran would give a crushing retort. And because, you know, based on the idea that we will be in, you know, 3 days in Ahvaz and a week in Tehran, they had such an impression about Iran's military power. And finally, Iran's innovation and innovative mind and the strong self-sufficient belief inserted into the society by late Imam Khomeini, that the idea that we can do it and we really could do it. Sometimes we were in very, very difficult situations with regard to equipments and necessary stuff for war. At the moment, we are much more prepared than the time of the wartime, a number of times more than that. And this is something that we learned from this sacred defense and this war, and we are much more seasoned.
Thank you, Brigadier General Nomi. We're going to take another break. We're going to show you a report on the Preservation and Sacred Defense Values and Works Museum. Stay with us.
The anniversary of the week of the Holy Defense here in Tehran, we decided to bring you to a very nice museum, which is called the Holy Defense Museum. Today I'm going to surprise you with very nice views of this museum, and I hope you like it. To make a museum of Holy Defense, they needed a vast area in order to put some of the missiles, aircrafts, tanks that we can see here. Over there we can see some of the aircrafts. Still, some people are walking in it. Also over there, there is a small missile and so many tanks. That's fascinating. On September 1980, Saddam's aircraft flew over Iran and attacked and bombarded some positions in Iran. The imposed war of Iraq over Iran just started and lasted for 8 years. Just browsing in the museum, and I encountered two of the staffs who were working in this museum, so I decided to go and say hello and ask some more detailed information about the complex. So now I have some specific questions about the area. Can you tell me more specific questions about the how big it is, this area is, and what can you add to the information that we have learned about this area?
Yes, of course. The whole Defense Museum is located in Upper Sagot lands. It is a cultural land, okay, mm-hmm. cultural area, which consists of several different places, such as Prophet Ibrahim Park, mm-hmm. the National Library of Iran, and the whole Defense Museum, and some other recreational center.
And I've seen some very beautiful plants and flowers. Can you describe more about the flowers and the plants implanted here in this garden?
Yes. In fact, there are more than 400 different evergreen plant species.
400?
Yes,
that's great.
Unbelievable. Which makes it quite unique in the whole country.
Mm-hmm.
And there are also many other exciting, charming things for our visitors. We have an artificial lake,
mm-hmm.
And a fountain that sprays water into the sky as high as 30 meters.
Mm-hmm.
And on this screen, different cutscenes and video clips of war are mm-hmm. displayed.
Mm-hmm.
Also, this area benefits from a very high-tech acoustics,
mm-hmm.
Which pumps music mm-hmm. into the garden.
There is 8 sections resembling the 8 years of Holy Defense. Can you describe me more about the 8th section?
As you mentioned, there are 7 halls and 7 galleries mm. inside the building itself. But the 8th one is the Holy Mosque of Huram Shah, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it is all at the end of the museum, and it presents an exact copy of the Huram Shah Mosque,
mm-hmm.
which is a symbol of our Iranian army and Iranian people resistance.
Mm-hmm.
So it is the mosque itself, which is called the 8th section of the museum.
Is it the same size?
Yes,
it's
the same size, the same material.
The colors, everything.
Everything is the exact copy of the Huram Shah
mm-hmm.
and we made it. We just tried to make a copy of it here to make and bring the existence to the museum.
That's very nice. That's very nice and very moving.
Welcome back to Spectrum Iran. Brigadier General Dr. Mohammad Hassan Nami. Earlier, sir, you told us about this sense of self-belief instilled in the Iranian nation, Iranian youth who fought this aggressive invasion. Tell us other benefits that the Iranian nation had in this regard, so far as self-sufficiency is concerned, for example.
Well, the imposed war had great benefits and merits to us. I can mention many of them. For example, just imagine, it created a stronger integrity and solidarity, different, nations and ethnicities in Iran. our people, including men and women, started to have a self-belief, and this self-belief was actually given by the war and their accomplishments. Our people, it caused our people to create a unity and the integrity and solidarity, you know, of following the leadership of Imam at that time and reaching the goal, because all people were fighting for something, were contributing to one goal and to expel and send the enemy out of the country. And I, as I said, in our, you know, operations, we could do that through this solidarity, unity, and under the supervision of our leader. You know, in one single operation, we could get back 5,000 square kilometers back from the enemy. We used different, you know, methods and strategies. We used war, actually water war, you know, which was not used anywhere in the world. That, you know, you guide the water in a way that, you know, pressurizes and canalizes people. You know, different benefits, but our elites and our intellectuals, university students, because war was a good university itself, they all entered the war, and we assessed and really felt in a very tangible manner that the needs of our country, if you see that, you know, in the molecular nano space, nuclear, in medical fields, in medicinal fields, you know, we have made great progress. The starting point was during the imposed war, actually. You know, in different stages, because the enemy did not provide us with the necessary facilities, you know, we started to do it ourselves, you know. I need to give an example in these space issues. You know, many countries have a satellite, for example, you know, 20 to 30 countries have satellites, but these satellites have been made and constructed by another country. There are countries that make their satellite and they send it through another carrier, but we can see that, you know, the carrier is, you know, is halted and launched into the space from another space. You know, for reaching space, we need to have four stages. Actually, one is the land headquarters with a very sophisticated technology, which we are self-sufficient in it. You know, Semnan, you know, launch area, and we have different places to run that. The missile, as you know, when at that time, you know, when they wanted to give us some RPG and some other shells and things like that, we were very happy. But now we have missiles that we are completely self-sufficient in it, and with the precision, very high precision, actually, you know, we are constructing them and we are totally self-sufficient. In the carriers, you know, we take our satellites. The satellite is made, you know, through a very, very complicated technology. Now we have some satellites, you know, construction groups, and our university students have entered this arena, the elites, the intellectuals, and we have many satellites being constructed at the moment. And the fourth stage is the control headquarters, that, you know, each satellite has a control, for example, system and reception system. This headquarters, you know, gives orders to the satellite and to film and things like that. This is not a little achievement. Another point is that, you know, through imposed war, we understood, the elites and intellectuals understood that, you know, when they are making an engine, you know, make a multi-purpose one and use it for airplanes, I don't know, tanks and different things like that. And this created and paved the way for our progress in a different and very different forms. And at that time, we started an armed force named the Revolution Guard. And before that, we didn't have such an armed forces. Another one, we tried to promote the experience of unity, solidarity, and integrity during the imposed wars. You know, the newly constructed and established Sepah. or the guard, and we were organized with army and other different armed forces, and we attacked the enemy, and this was done in the light of the imposed war, and as we said, that these were the benefits. And maybe it's the first time that, you know, people, civilian people, were trained, and this training continues in different forms of besiege. It's still going on. Maybe not any country has this many, you know, trained people armed in the armed forces.
Well, Dr. Naomi, I have many questions, many more questions left, but unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this edition of Spectrum Iran. I'd like to bring this edition to an end. I'd like to thank my special guest for his time and input. We had the pleasure of being joined in the studio by Brigadier General Dr. Mohammad Hassan Naomi, Deputy Chief of the Preservation of Sacred Defense Values and Works Foundation. Dr. Naomi, thank you for having taken part in our program, sir.
Thank you very much, and best wishes
thank
for
you. Thank
you
very much, and best wishes for you
college.
And your colleagues.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And that's a wrap for this edition of Spectrum Iran. Thanks to our viewers for staying tuned. If you'd like to make any comments or suggestions, please do so by emailing us at iran@sartv.ir. Goodbye and God bless.
Thank you.